Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Christian Simon, and I'm going to be talking about continuous profiling. So we heard a lot about observability today already, and I'm going to want to introduce maybe an additional signal there. Maybe quickly about me. So I'm working at Grafana Labs. I'm a software engineer there and worked on our databases for observability. So I worked on Cortex / Mimir. Now, I worked on Loki, and most recently I switched to the Flare team, and I'm 50% of the Flare team. And we kind of work on a continuous profiling database. There's not going to be a particular focus on Flare today. So basically what I want to talk today is kind of introduce how it's measured, what you can achieve with it, and then maybe as I learn more, at the next FOSDEM, I can go more into detail and look at very specific languages there. So when we talk about observability, like what are our common goals? Like obviously we want to ensure that the user journeys of our users are successful, that we maybe even can be proactively find problems before a user notices it, and like basically like we want to be as quickly as possible when those problems happen to disrupt less of those user journeys, and observability provides us like an objective way of getting some insights into the state of our system in production, and even after a certain event has happened, we found the right way, reboot, and it's all up again. I think it might be able to help us understanding what exactly happened when we want to figure out the root cause of something. So one of the, I guess, easiest and probably oldest observability signals is logs. So like, I guess it starts with a kind of print hello somewhere in your code. And I guess we probably don't need a show of hands who's using it. Like, I guess everyone somehow uses logs or is asleep. If they don't show a hand. So basically, like, your application doesn't need any specific SDK. It can probably just log based on the standard library of your languages. One of the challenges, most of the time the format is, rather varied. So, like, even in terms of timestamps, it can be really, really hard to get a common understanding of your log lines there. And also, like, when you then want to aggregate them, they are quite costly. So like it's bytes, you need to kind of convert them to ints, floats, and so on. And also that something that can happen is that like you have so many logs that you can't find the ones that you're actually interested in. So like a grep error, for example, could be maybe helpful, but also like there might be just too many errors and you kind of lose the important ones. So also, like, if you want to learn more about logs, my colleagues, Owen and Kavi, they're going to speak about Loki, so definitely stay in the room. And I'm going to move on to the next signal, so metrics. I'm also assuming pretty much everyone has come across them and is using them. So in this case, you kind of avoid that problem I mentioned before. You have the actual integers exposed. You maybe know about those integers that you care about them. So to get a metric, most of the time you have to do some kind of define a list of metrics you care about, and then you can collect them. So it might be you might be having kind of an outage and didn't have that metric that you care about, and so you need to kind of constantly improve on the exposure of the metrics. Obviously, like Prometheus is the kind of main tool in that space, and very often we talk about web services, I guess, when we think about those applications. So the RED method, so like get the rates of your requests, get the error rate of your request, and get the latency duration of the request, can already cover quite a lot of cases. And obviously, like as it's kind of just integers or floats, you can aggregate them quite efficiently across like multitude of pods or like a really huge setup of services. And Then if you get more into that kind of microservices architecture that has kind of evolved over the last couple of years, you will find yourself kind of having a really complex composition of services being involved in answering requests. And so like, you might even struggle to understand what's slowing you down or where the error is coming from. Why do I have this timeout here? And distributed tracing can help you a lot with kind of getting an understanding of what your service is doing. It also might be that like maybe the service is actually doing way too much and you're calculating things over and over again. So that is super helpful to get a bit more like the kind of flow of the data in your system. So like the challenge there might be like you might have a lot of requests, and there's, while it's somewhat cheap to get the tracing, you might not cover all the requests. So for example, in our production system, I think maybe someone needs to correct me if I'm wrong, but like we when we receive as Grafana Cloud like logs and metric data, we only cover 1% of those with traces, while we cover 100% of our queries. So like, but you need to make a selective decision if it's worth investing that. Like, obviously logs, data logs are always the same, it comes every second and so on. So like, we see more value in having all of those queries where there's a complex kind of caching and all sorts of systems interacting with it. And so that allows us, yeah, to look a bit deeper and even then find that one service that maybe is the bottleneck there. So maybe looking at a bit of a real problem. So I'm having an online shop, I'm selling socks, and a user is complaining about getting some timeout when wanting to check out. That's obviously not great because I'm not selling the socks, but at least the user got like some trace ID and isn't complaining to our customer service. Then starting from there, I might figuring out, it's the location service that actually was the one that caused the timeout in the end. And then like looking at the metrics of the location service, I might find, like there's actually 5% of the requests timing out. So maybe 5% of my users are not able to buy their socks monthly or whatever. And so what are the next steps? I guess scaling up is always good. So like maybe the service is just overloaded. The person that wrote it left years ago, so we have no idea. So we just scale it up. Obviously, it comes with a cost. And so I think always the first thing would be fixing the bleed, making sure no more timeouts. So scaling up is definitely the right option here. But then if you do that over years, you might suddenly find yourself having a lot more extra costs attached to that location service. And so that's kind of where I think we need another signal. And I think that signal should be profiling. So I guess most people might have come across profiling. And it basically measures your code and how long it executes, for example, or what kind of bytes it allocates in memory. And it basically helps you maybe understand your program even more, or someone else's program in the location service case. So, and that eventually can translate in like cost savings. If you find out where the problem lies, like you can maybe fix it or can get some ideas. Maybe you can also look at the fix and see if it's gotten actually worse or better. And like that basically like gives you a better understanding of how your code behaves. And so now the question is, how is like kind of actually, what is actually measured in a profile? So I created like a bit of a program. I don't know, I hope everyone can see it. So it's basically like a program that has a main function and then calls out other functions. So you can see like there's a do a lot and there's a do little function, and both of them then call prepare. So, and obviously in the comments, there's some work going on. And obviously the work could be allocating memory, like using the CPU, something like that. So let's say we use CPU. So when the function starts, like we are first going to do something within the main. Let's say we spend 3 CPU cycles, which is not a lot, but that then gets recorded like, yes, we took us 3 CPU cycles in main. We then go into the prepare method through do a lot, there we spend another 5 CPU cycles, and those kind of stack traces then, they are recorded in the profile. And going through the program, like, we will end up with that kind of measurement of stack traces. And while it kind of works with 10 lines of code, you can maybe spot where the problem is, like there's the 20 and do a lot. It definitely like kind of breaks down when you're speaking about like a lot of services or like a lot of code base that is happened or happens to be hot and actively used. And so like there are a couple of ways of visualizing them. I think one of the first things you would find is kind of a top table. So like in that table, you can order it by different values. Like so this is kind of an example from pprof, like, which is kind of the Go tool. But, and you can see kind of clearly do a lot is the method that comes out on top. And like there are now different ways how you can look at the value. So you have the flat count, which is the function itself only. So you can see the 20 that we had before, 20 CPU cycles. But we also have the cumulative measurement, which also includes the prepare that is going to get called from do a lot. And so like we already can see, we spend 52% of our program in do a lot. So maybe we already can stop looking at the table and just look at do a lot. Because if we fix do a lot or get rid of it, we need half of the CPU less. And that's that kind of, it's kind of represented by the sum. So the sum will always change depending on how you order the table in that particular example. So in this case, like, we have 100% already at row number 4 because we only have 4 functions. So, and to get a bit more of a visual sense of what's going on, there are the so-called flame graphs. And I think the most confusing thing for me about them was the coloring. So obviously, like, red is always not great. Should we look at main? No, we shouldn't. So basically, like, the coloring, I think, is random or uses some kind of hashing. And basically, it's only meant to look like a flame. So like, the red here doesn't mean anything. So like, if you're colorblind, that's perfect for flame graphs. So what we actually want to look at is this kind of, like, at the leaf end, is basically where the program would spend things. Like, you can see the 3 CPU cycles main here, so there's nothing below. So main uses 100% through methods that are called by main, and then there's nothing beyond this here. So, like, here we spend something in main. And in the same way, in do little, we can see the 5, and in do a lot, we can see the 20. Quite wide, and then the prepares with 5 each as well. And now, obviously, if you look across a really huge program, you basically like can spot kind of what's going on quite quickly. And then, if you have like similar width, like root and main, like you basically can ignore that, but it helps you maybe locate which component of your program you want to look at, because like maybe you're not good at naming and you call everything prepare and util and it would still tell you roughly where it gets called and how the program gets there. So how do we get that profile? And that can be kind of quite, there can be quite a lot of challenges how to get that. So I think I would say like there's like roughly 2 ways. Like either your ecosystem supports kind of profiles fairly natively, and then you instrument the profile, you add maybe a library and an SDK, and like basically like the runtime within your environment will maybe expose the information. So like it's not available for all languages. There's, I guess, a lot of work going on that it becomes more and more available. The kind of other approach is more like through an agent, and eBPF has been quite hyped. I'm not very familiar with eBPF myself. I have used the agents, but haven't written any code. But basically, what it would use, it would use an outside view of it. So you wouldn't need to change the binary running, really. Like, you would just, yeah, kind of look at the information you get from the Linux kernel. Like, you hook into, I don't know, often enough when the CPU runs to then find out what is currently running. So there are different languages, like, for example, in a compiled language, you would be having a lot more information. The memory addresses are the same. You can kind of use the information within the symbol table to figure out where your program is and what is currently running. In like, I don't know, like an interpreted language like Ruby, Python, this might be a bit harder, and that information might not be accessible to the kernel without further work. Like, it also, when you compile, you might drop those symbol tables, like, so that you really need to kind of be preparing your application a bit for that. And then basically, like, yeah, I want to look into the kind of prime example I'm most familiar with. So I'm mostly a Go developer over the last couple of years. So Go has quite a kind of mature set of tools in that area. So basically, the standard library allows you to expose that information. It supports like CPU and memory. And especially garbage collected languages, memory is quite a thing to also in non-garbage collected languages, but memory is really important to understand the usage there. I have a quick example of a program. Like, so you basically like just expose an HTTP port where you can download the profile whenever you want, and you have that pprof tool that you can point to it. So like in that kind of first line example, you would just get a 2 second long profile, so a CPU profile that looks at the CPU for 2 seconds and basically records like whatever is running, how long on the CPU, and then you get the file, and pprof will allow you to visualize it through that top table, for example. So what I forgot to mention as well, so later you can maybe go to that URL and look at that profile that I had it in as an example. In the same way, you can get the memory allocations, and pprof also allows you to launch an HTTP server to be a bit more interactive and select certain code paths. So that is like quite a lot in the Go docs, go.dev, about profiling. So I definitely leave it there. So you can also look at kind of maybe if you are a Go developer, like use that and play around yourself. But now I want to speak about why profiling might be actually quite difficult. So the example I had, like I had 3 CPU cycles, and if you think about it, that's not very much. So, and just to record what the program was doing in those 3 CPU cycles probably takes, I have no idea, but thousands of CPU cycles. And so you really want to be careful what you want to record. If you really would record all of that, like your program would probably have like a massive overhead, would slow down by profile and behave completely different. And you also would have a lot more data to store, to analyze. And then if you think about microservices and replica count 500, you might get quite a lot of data that is actually not that useful to you. Because are you really caring about 3 CPU cycles? Probably not. And because of that, to allow continuous profiling, so to do that in production across like a wide set of deployments, like I think Google were the first ones to do that, and they were starting to sample those profiling. So instead of looking at really every code that runs, Go, for example, looks 100 times a second what is currently running on the CPU, and then records it. And obviously, maybe like an integer adder will not be on the CPU if you don't run it all the time. And so you get a really accurate representation of what is really taking your CPU time. And the way that works, you also need to be kind of aware that like some things, the actual program might not be on the CPU because it might be waiting for I/O. And so like when you kind of collect a profile and the profile is not having that many seconds, you really need to think about, is this really what I want to optimize, or maybe I'm not seeing what I actually want to see. With that kind of statistical approach, like like, I don't have any kind of sources to say, but like, I think generally you say that it's like a 2-3% overhead that gets added on top of your program execution. And so that's, I guess, a lot more reasonable than the full approach with recording everything. And so what you generally kind of would do, obviously, if you first need to ship your application somewhere and run it, then you can look at the profiles. And yeah, think about it, look at it. Like maybe you are the owner of that code. Maybe you have a bit more understanding, and those profiles maybe can give you a bit more of an idea of what you're actually doing there, or how the system is reacting to your code. And so basically, like for that green box, multiple solutions exist. So I'm obviously a bit biased, but I also have to say our project is fairly young and evolving. So for example, there's like a CNCF Pixie, eBPF based, there's Polar Signals Parker, like people are in the room, Pyroscope and kind of our solution. I think they're all great. Like you can all use them and start using them and exploring, like maybe just your benchmarks for a start. And then as you get more familiar with it, like you might discover more and more of the value there. So I'm still going to use Flare now for my quick demo. Let me just see. So I guess most of you are kind of familiar with Grafana and Explore. Ooh. Why is it so huge? So basically, that's kind of the entry point you're going to see in the Explore. You have the kind of typical time range selection. So let's say we want to see the last 15 minutes now. And here we can see the profile types collected. So that's just a Docker Compose running locally on my laptop, hopefully running locally on my laptop since I started the talk. And for example, we can here look at the CPU. So that's kind of this nanosecond spent on the CPU. And you can kind of see the flame graph from earlier, and maybe some bug. I don't know. It looks a bit bigger than it usually should be. But we can see that kind of top table. We can see the aggregation of all the services. So I'm running like 5 pods or something like that, different languages. So you can see, like, for example, this here is like a Python main module where it's doing something.